Anyway, this is
number
Nitro episode.
Nitro
episode number 15. Welcome back, everybody. Let's get this thing going.
Nice. Well, we're back, and we're better than ever, and we're talking about the one and only Nitro.
Nitro's overrated. Everybody likes it, and everybody hates it.
Okay, so we're going to start this episode by saying that Bert is grumpy regarding Nitro.
I am always grumpy regarding everything.
Okay, yeah. So he's cranky about Nitro. We'll say cranky.
But why? Nitro sucks.
Okay, we're going to step back again. Bert, why are you cranky about Nitro?
Nitro is love-hate. That's Nitro to me is the perfect definition of love hate.
No, it's all love.
You love it and you hate it.
Why? Explain the
hate. It balances itself very nicely. Uh-uh. You hate 50% of it, you love 50% of it. So at the end of the day, there's neither love or hate. It's a nice equal balance of
tolerance.
tolerance and enjoyment, I guess you could say. Enjoyment.
You tolerate Nitro.
I love how it flies. I think it's awesome. I love the noise. I love the smoke. I love the power curve or power band or whatever you would say, the power throughput of Nitro, which is relatively tame, but it's very torquey. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love all of that about it. But I hate everything that has to be done to maintain a Nitro helicopter properly.
So like cleaning it and changing bearings and glow plugs and fuel filters and fuel tubing. And
it's a lot going on. If you want a trouble-free experience where you keep a helicopter in the trunk, say you commute every day to work, 15, 20 minutes each way to work, back from work, and say there's a flying field somewhere near on the way or on the way back, or like there's a place where you can stop by like a club or like a park where you can fly. If you have an electric helicopter, you just got to make sure your batteries are charged. Mm-hmm. And you can leave it in the trunk of your car. And you can go to work back and forth from work 50 times without touching it. And it's all good.
Yeah.
And the day you go fly it, as long as the batteries are charged, you fly it, you put it back in the trunk, you're done.
Yeah.
Good luck with Nitro. No way.
Yeah, there's no chance. You got to make sure you have glow plugs because those randomly die.
Yep. And then you might have a glow plug and you happen to forget the glow plug driver loosen up you to replace your plug. So you're screwed right there and then. Done.
Yeah. Your starter has to be charged. If you don't have a manual fuel pump, the electronic fuel pump has to be charged.
Yep. And if you have a manual one, it could fail. A lot of those cheapo, like most of the ones, they're all cheap crap. They all fail, the manual fuel pumps. The electric ones fail too.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention you need a glow driver. Mm-hmm. You need to not forget to charge it. And if you forgot to charge it, your stuff's not going to start.
Exactly.
You could have a switch glow, which is a wonderful invention. It's awesome, but it could fail too.
I've had them fail.
Yeah. Or you could just have a chafe wire on your switch glow or your ground just can't break loose.
Oh, the ground. I used to grind my gears.
You need your starter. Like you said, starter needs to be charged.
Yep.
And then you need to, do your maintenance periodically. Mm-hmm. You got to change your bearings, rings.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. And then stuff like usually loosens up. There's vibration-induced failure on electronics. Those are the negatives. But the positives is it's freaking awesome. It sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels good. It's like a totally different experience in the flight time.
It's like a feels at home. Whenever I fly a Nitro Heli, it feels so natural to me. The power curve is it's not like responsive, but how I like to fly is I like to really jam on the sticks and, get aggressive on the sticks.
But
so
I wonder
you can do that with Nitro.
But I wonder if that applies to you because you you started with Nitro the same way I did because you started many years ago.
Yeah.
But I wonder what it's like to the newer guys that started, say, 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years ago and started with electric. I feel if Nitro feels very foreign to them.
I've seen it happen. I'm not going to name any names, but I've seen people who grew up on electric and just recently they pick up a Nitro and, they put 14 degrees of collective and jamming on takeoff and you can't do that. So they learn pretty quick that whole special thing called collective management.
Anyway, before we start talking about Nitro, what have you been up to?
I just got back from New York. I drove home to Rochester, New York to see some family and go to the Northeast Model Helicopter Jamboree Funfly.
Nice.
My hometown home field Funfly.
Was it fun?
It was a good time. We had a lot of fun, got in a lot of flights, and I brought back some airplanes with me for you and I to play with.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you?
I've been taking care of everything that you do in addition to everything that I do while you've been gone, so it sucked for me. So I'm glad you enjoy your vacation. But no, I haven't been doing much at all. Nothing much, really. Yeah, been just chilling and working and nothing special, you know? But anyway, let's just get going with Nitro, because I think there's a lot to cover here.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. So where do you want to begin? We have a laundry list of things to cover. Do you want to start with like where Nitro kind of began and what it was like back when you and I were into it?
Yeah, I think Nitro is extremely important when it comes to RC helicopters as well as RC everything or anything RC, because I believe Nitro was the dominant, the primary or only way to fly years ago, right?
The only way. Well, with the exception of gassers.
Yeah, but gassers,
they weren't as big.
No, they weren't as big. They were more expensive, more complex. They vibrated more.
Yeah.
They need a lot of modifications. But when it comes to helicopters, I think Nitro was the only way to go for decades.
Yeah.
Decades.
Yeah.
And I don't think I had an electric helicopter back in the early 2000s. And I honestly don't think that, and it was flying with NiCads, right? Mm-hmm. Nickel metal, nickel cadmium batteries, and then they did nickel metal batteries, nickel metal hydride batteries, but I don't think electrics ever went anywhere until they actually finally started to push the lithium polymer,
correct?
Which became a sort of mainstream. Popular, replacing all the NiCats and nickel metal batteries, I would say in the mid-2000s. Maybe 2004 is when I started seeing LiPos come alive and become popular, 2003, 2004, 2005.
I agree.
Up until then, it was Nitro. That's the only thing you could do.
Sure.
And even the electrics were somewhat underpowered compared to Nitro. So you could fly, I remember Logo Mikado used to make a Logo 14, a Logo 10. I had a Logo 10.
Me too.
Which was 10 cells NiCat. And then a Logo 14, which I think I was flying Logo 14 back then. It was 6S, I think. I might be wrong. I don't remember exactly. But I think it was a 6 or an 8S battery. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a 700 class machine, which back in the day we used to call 90 size machines for Nitro. There was nothing that could touch it in terms of power and flight time and anything else.
Not even close.
So Nitro is extremely important in terms of the RC helicopter history, period.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah, back in the day there was no like, oh, are you running that on electric or Nitro? It was, oh, you're running that on Nitro. The only electric option that I can really think back that far was like the Logo 10, like you mentioned. Yeah. I had one of those. And then the 3S 2200 T-Rex 450 size helis.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was the most popular LiPo powered machine, I'd say. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a JR, what was that thing called?
The Voyager.
Voyager.
Yeah.
That was a 425 millimeter wooden blade made by JR. And it was running on a single 4S back.
Yep.
And it was like the equivalent to a T-Rex 500, 425 millimeter blades. You know, smaller than a Goblin 500.
Yeah.
But boy, that thing was underpowered. Even though it taught me like loops and rolls and very basic maneuvers, it was so underpowered.
But it was a pretty good machine though for its day.
For its day. But there was nothing like Nitro in terms of power. The only reason why I thought of that electric when I first saw it is because it was small. It was like simple. It didn't take a lot of room to fly. I had this big, lived in a subdivision. I had this big roundabout right at the entrance of the subdivision. Mm-hmm. Huge roundabout. It was surrounded by trees, but it was huge. It was like half the football field, half the size of a football field.
Yeah.
And I would fly that there, whereas Nitro was like, you know, it's going to make noise and the neighbors are probably going to get upset.
Mm-hmm.
So that was perhaps the only reason why considered getting that machine.
Sure.
But back in the day, it was just nitro all the way. Why would you do anything else?
Yeah. So. Well, I can go back remembering like the JR Venture 30 and the Venture 50 running the OS 30 and OS 50 respectively. And I think I'm going to make a statement that I think the OS 50 was probably hands down the most reliable and easiest to tune engine that has ever been released.
Still to this day. I wish they still made it.
To this day. Because I had one needle. Well, I guess two if you want to argue. Because I had the idle needle, the idle screw.
Idle screw and your high end.
And then the high end. That's all there was. If it was lean, then you originally had one needle. It was so easy. It ran consistent flight to flight. Had good power for the days. And man, I miss that motor. It was a good motor.
So I apologize to the listeners ahead of time if we're being too basic here. But I feel like for the people that are new to the hobby and they're listening to this, we should give them a very, very brief 2-minute, 1-minute explanation about the different sized nitro engines.
Sure.
So most of you guys already know this, but there's the 30 class, which includes the OS 32, OS 37. I don't know if either one of those are still being made.
I think the 37 is.
Could be. And, you know, for most newbies back in the day, they'd be recommended to get a 30-sized nitro helicopter, like a Raptor 30 or a Shuttle or something like that.
Right.
And they would set it up on an OS 32. And if they wanted a little bit more power, they would get the OS 37. I don't know that anybody flies those things anymore. They're extremely underpowered. I mean, I'm sure that people still, old-timers still have some maybe in the closet somewhere. I still have an OS 37, I think. In my shit in the backyard.
Well, they kind of got revived when the Gowie NX4 came out.
Correct. The NX4, you're right. Yeah. I forgot that one. Yes. Yeah. But other than the NX4, I don't think there's anything out there. I mean, typically we used to fly those things on 500 millimeter blades.
They were small machines, yeah.
Yeah, but 500, though. Right. Think about it. Like, think about how much power you could put into a Goblin 500 or you know, T-Rex 500 or something 500 size. It's like a lot of power, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there was that, the 30 class, which is not popular unless people go now with the NX4. That's really all I can think of that would run a 30 series.
True.
Then there was the 50 series, which was the OS 55 at the time. And we're thinking OS because that's our main experience. I know.
Correct.
Yeah. YS makes engines too. We'll get to YS versus OS later. But then there was the OS 55, which was very popular with the Raptor 50. And then there was a model called the Skidoo 50 by Hirobo. There were a lot of models that run off of the OS 50, which was technically an OS 50 engine. Like you said, Kyle, like two needles, like basically an idle needle and a mid to high range needle. And later on, the T-Rex 600, which was released in 2006, I believe, 2007.
Yeah.
2007.
Yeah.
OS 50 all the way. And then, of course, the 90 series, which OS was making an OS 91 for the longest time. And they made all kinds of different revisions, the Z, the ZH, the speed model.
HZR.
And then they did a speed, OS speed model, and then they eventually evolved to the 105. The 50 series evolved from the 50 to the 55.
Yes.
And unfortunately, due, I believe, to the decline in the hobby and everything else, OS themselves have discontinued a few of these models. I don't know if the 32 still exists. I know they make a 37. Definitely the OS 50, which I love that engine, has been discontinued in lieu of the OS 55, which is a two-needle engine, three-needle instead of two.
And even the 55 got discontinued for the 55 HZR, I believe.
Correct, yeah. And then the OS 90s, 91s, got discontinued in lieu of the 105.
Yeah.
So the only remaining nitros, to be frank, I guess, are the OS 50, the 50 series, which is comprised of an OS 55, and the 90 size helicopters comprised of an OS 105, and of course the YS equivalents.
Sure.
The 30s, again, unless you're into the NX4, that's all you get. Like, there's no true model that runs an OS 32 or 37 other than the NX4 that I can think of, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And another change that we've seen over the years is a very big muffler manufacturer has gone out of business, which was Hattori. Now, if any of you guys have been around in the hobby for any length of time, the name Hattori Muffler will be very familiar because they made an incredibly good muffler for the past, I don't know, what has it been, 20 years maybe? Mm-hmm. 10, 20 years, something mm-hmm. like that. They made mufflers for every popular size, varying in models and names and performance and stuff. And if you can find a Hattori muffler for your engine, definitely scoop it up, because those things ran, in my opinion, the most amount of power, the smoothest, the best sound, and they were just great overall mufflers. But, you know, there's other stuff these days to fill in the void. Like, Matt Botos just released the ProTune pipe for the OS-105, and that thing runs really well. I think it sounds really good, and it makes good power. And then, of course, the OS Power Boost pipe runs really well as well.
Yeah, back in the day, there were so many different pipes, right? Yeah. There was the...
There was Funtek.
Oh, my God. There was Funtek. There was Hattori. Hattori was always the most popular. Align used to make a decent pipe back then.
Yep.
And then there was the Funtek, like you said. The Muscle Pipe by Curtis Youngblood.
Yes, yes.
Muscle Pipe 2.
Yeah.
There were a lot of different pipes. These days, we're left with practically almost nothing. We have
OS and now ProTune.
ProTune, and then we have the Italian pipe from Massimo.
Oh, yes. Yep. MRCI pipe.
MRCI pipe. Yeah. Really good pipe, too.
That's pretty cool. You've been trying that lately. That's
nice. Yeah. I think it runs awesome. I think it's really, really nice.
Yeah.
So there's only really technically three pipe options anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going to YS, the equivalents. Back in the day, I remember I was flying YS way back, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have a 90 yet. I think it was a 70 or an 80 YS.
Right.
And then they released the 90. Nowadays, the YS lineup includes the 60 SR, mm-hmm. and then they have three 90 class engines. They have the 91 Touareg Edition, mm-hmm. the 96 Touareg Edition, and the 120 Touareg Edition. So let's talk about YS versus OS.
Sure, let's get into it.
Let's skip to that real quick.
Sure. YS versus OS.
What do you think of YS?
I have not flown a YS engine since probably, my dad's going to correct me on this after he listens to this, but probably like 2005. I mean, I know me and my dad flew it back in the JR Vigor days, in the JR Vibe days. And if you guys know what that is, you know how old that is. But ever since, we've been flying OS and have been just loving them. But YS, to me, has always... I think they have more power, but they run higher vibration, and they're harder to tune. I personally cannot tune a YS to save my life, because everything I've learned from OS, for whatever reason, doesn't apply to YS. I'm not saying it's a bad motor, because I can't say anything bad about them. I just... I'm not familiar.
I'm going to defend YS with the comment you made. I totally agree with you, mm-hmm. not to say I don't. I do not personally like YS simply because I do not know how to tune it.
Right.
And it's totally, totally different than an OS engine
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the tuning and how you listen to it.
Right.
I think the best piece of advice, one of the best pieces of advice we can give the listeners on this podcast is that if you're into Nitro or if you're venturing into Nitro, stick to one brand.
Agreed.
And fly that brand.
Agreed.
You will learn everything about that brand. You will learn what to listen to,
because
mm-hmm. a lot of the tuning has... People might tell you that tuning has a lot to do with smoke and temperature. I am a big believer that tuning has a lot to do with sound.
Agreed.
And when you understand the sound the engine makes and know what to listen to, you can tune your engine without caring how much smoke is putting out, how hot it's running. You don't even temp it. You don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get in tune with how the engine sounds and is supposed to sound and what kind of power throughput is supposed to give you, mm-hmm. you can tune that engine without caring about anything else.
Right.
And the classic example was, rest in peace, Uncle, the godfather of OS engines.
Steve Helms.
Yeah. Steve, it could be in his shop and I could be in his backyard flying, and he would come out and they're like, you need two clicks. Like, he was unbelievable when it came to that, because he knew what to listen for.
I heard a story that he once tuned a motor from hearing it over his cell phone. He could tell if it was... He was like, I think you need to go three clicks leaner on that. Just from a cell phone. Not even worrying about temperature. It wasn't even a concern.
He was incredible. So with that said, I think whatever you get, stick to it. If you're into YS, I personally couldn't help you with an YS.
Mm-hmm.
I know people flying YS, like James Van Hook, for example. He came here, flew YS. I didn't know if it was rich or lean. It just didn't sound good to me, and that was all I could tell.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, I could have probably helped them tune it if I really would have dedicated myself to figuring out, because right. you know, there's only two ways you can go, rich or lean. But the way that YS carburetors work is totally different. The long needle works throughout the entire range, and the short needle works more on the top end, I believe. Mm-hmm. Whereas OS is more, you focus more on the short needle, on the long needle, because the, correction, on OS you focus more on your high end needle, that's the most important needle, and the long needle, which is the, or the mid-range needle, mm-hmm. you don't tweak as much. It's not as mm-hmm. it's not as important.
Right.
I feel like OS is kind of the opposite of that, but right. either way.
And if any of you are listening and all of this is a lot to take in, we totally understand. And if you want a more in-depth and slowed down version, I highly, highly recommend you check out Smack Talk RC episode, what is it, one? I think it's one.
Episode one.
Episode one, done by Burt Kammer and Bobby Watts back like
very ten, old.
10
very
years old. Ago. But yeah. the same concepts applied the to today. The
same concept, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so if you want more in-depth, that's a good way to go. But
so let's talk about the differences in carburetors.
Carburetors, yep. We touched on a little bit, but let's go a little deeper.
The original carburetors were, regardless of the needles, the original engines just use a carburetor that allowed the engine to run with just muffler pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I remember not, well, long, it was long ago, but not as long as I would think.
Mm-hmm.
When I was flying the first T-Rex 700 Nitro that Jason Krause designed, it was mm-hmm. released in 2008,
mm-hmm.
I had an engine, which was a rebranded OS engine by Align, that didn't have a regulator, didn't have anything. It was just a plain old carburetor, and it ran off of muffler pressure. And that thing ran beautifully, had no problems.
Mm-hmm.
So nowadays, I think those are hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to get a regulated carburetor, which requires backplate pressure from your engine.
Mm-hmm.
So you run a fuel line from your fuel tank, from your back plate on your engine to your fuel tank, and that creates pressure on your fuel tank, and the fuel tank sends a much higher amount of pressure through your carb, and then the regulator in the carburetor itself mm-hmm. regulates that pressure mm-hmm. going into the engine.
Yeah, you made a you just touched on something that we should probably speak about, was there's muffler pressure versus fuel tank pressure. So Bert mentioned muffler pressure, and the goal is to keep pressure in the tank at all times, but how muffler pressure worked is there's air, or Bert, you can probably correct me on this, but there's air pressure coming out of the muffler.
Yeah, exhaust, basically exhaust pressure. Exhaust, yeah. Air. So, it's basically exhaust fumes, but yeah, it's air.
So
yeah.
How it worked is there was a small threaded hole with a nipple coming off the muffler, and you would run a fuel tubing from that nipple to the fuel tank.
The fuel tank, yeah.
And the air pressure would push exhaust slash pressure into the tank. But nowadays we do backplate pressure. So there's pressure yeah. coming out of the back plate. It's going through a check valve, so it can't go back into the engine, and then it's pressuring the tank that way.
Correct.
So that's how it's done these days.
But back plate pressure is a lot. There's a lot more pressure. There's more
yes.
PSI, per
yeah.
se,
yeah.
in the fuel tank than there was with muffler pressure, and mm-hmm. hence the reason as to why the carburetors of today have a regulator built mm-hmm. in. Because that regulator, which mm-hmm. it looks like a very thick quarter, mm-hmm. almost looks like a coin,
mm-hmm.
that regulator regulates that pressure going into the carburetor.
Yeah.
And then, of course, your needle settings determine, you know, your actual fuel flow.
Right.
But that's the standard today, right? Mm-hmm. That's what everybody does.
And it's cleaner air because there's no exhaust going into your tank. I remember with muffler pressure, we would have to change our fuel magnet more often because the exhaust fumes would break down the foam quicker. Over yeah, time.
Absolutely.
So
one of the things with muffler pressure back in the day is when we used to use fuel magnets,
mm-hmm.
The material in the fuel magnet would deteriorate very quickly because of the exhaust fumes that were introduced into the fuel tank.
Right.
One of the ways in which I was able to extend the life of my fuel magnets was by leaving the tank full.
Yep.
So I just top it off at the end of the day and just store it full of fuel, so because mm-hmm. the fuel would push the exhaust fumes mm-hmm. out of the tank, and mm-hmm. the magnets would last considerably longer.
Mm-hmm.
If you left the fuel tank completely empty, your fuel magnet would literally rot away in a matter of a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But even to this day, I still leave fuel in the tank.
Me
even
too.
To this day, because I feel like leaving that fuel magnet, that fuel pickup, the clunk, mm-hmm. which we call it a magnet because mm-hmm. it's made out of some sort of foam, mm-hmm. you know, leaving that soaking in fuel makes it last longer.
Yeah, and it's also good for your fuel grommets, the grommet that holds the fuel line and the fuel magnet into the tank. It's good to keep those wet because if they're wet all the time, then dry out.
Yeah, they don't dry rot.
If they dry rot, it creates a leak. So I always keep my tank full or at least half, at least the grommet and the magnet wet. So
the needles. Okay, yes. So we're talking OS here, and I apologize if you guys want YS information. We're really not the proper people to give it to you. But when it comes to OS, so one thing that I've always told people, and I learned this from Steve, is every needle controls every aspect of your tuning range. In other words, you might think that your idle screw only controls your idle rung. Mm-hmm. It bleeds through part of your entire fuel range.
Yep.
Doesn't affect your high end, of course, because you're tuning the very low end. But it bleeds through about half of its tuning range to about half. Mm-hmm. So if you run too lean of an idle screw, you're going to be leaning out your mid-range, which mm-hmm. in turn you're going to have to richen your mid-range needle by a lot. Mm-hmm. And that applies to all the needles. If you lean your high end too much, that's eventually going to bleed down into your mid-range as well.
Sure.
So the best tuning is to find a sweet spot to where all three needles are working in beautiful harmony, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I always used to tell people back when we were flying nitro all the time is like, set your idle needle to stock. Mm-hmm. Leave your idle as stock. Don't mess with it. Mm-hmm. Focus on the other two. And then on an OIS engine, you set your idle needle to stock and your mid-range needle to stock. And then you focus on the high end. And what the high end does is you have to be good enough of a pilot to really get into the high end. A lot of people don't really understand what the high end and the mid range is, right?
Mm-hmm. True.
High end is when the carburetor is wide open. That's your high end.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get on the high end? The easiest way is to do, for example, like really, really wide open forward flight, like a forward circle, like a hurricane, upright. Mm-hmm. That would be the easiest way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like huge loops where you're flooring your full collective, like wide open on the climb. Obviously, you're going to come off the collective on the way down from the loop, but that first half of the loop, you're like wide open. That's mm-hmm. your high range.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're going to tune that high-end needle. Mm-hmm. And once you get that needle tuned properly, then you move on to the mid-range needle.
Mm-hmm.
And your high end is still affecting your mid range. So that's why it's so important that you do the high end first. Then you move on to the mid range needle.
Mm-hmm.
And the mid range needle is basically where the helicopter hovers. That's, I don't know, anywhere between 1/3 and 1/2 carburetor barrel open.
Mm-hmm.
That's your mid range right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like Kyle explained, best thing to do is to watch. It sounds like a shameless plug, but watch this Mac Talk. Mm-hmm. RC, smacktalkrc.com, episode number one. Mm-hmm. I explain
mm-hmm.
how to go through this tuning, but it's all a matter of ear, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, watching to make sure the engine's not running too hot and it's making the right amount of power. Yeah. If your engine is not making good power, it is more than likely 90% attributed to the fact that it's running lean.
Mm-hmm.
An engine that is running rich does not make power, but it makes more power than if it's running. The likelihood of your engine not making power is because of it's lean, not
correct.
Rich.
Correct.
Unless you're extremely rich, where you're seeing fuel residue everywhere and spitting out fuel,
mm-hmm.
you're always gonna make more power by being rich than by being lean.
Correct.
Period.
And if you, for whatever reason, want to err on one side or the other, you definitely want to err on the side of rich. Your engine will last longer. For one thing, your engine's going to last longer if you tune correctly. But if you want to err on one side, you definitely want to err on the side of rich. Because lean, it can take out the bearings, take out the ring, take out the cylinder, take out everything if you're running too hot. So if you're going to err on one side, definitely go to the rich side. But proper tuning is obviously the best way to
engine. And I always used to say that too. That's a good point. Like mm-hmm. if you're ever in doubt, rich in it.
Yes, always.
If you're ever in doubt, rich in it.
Yep.
And you know, eventually you get the hang of it based on sound. But one thing that I also noticed is a new or healthy engine is always going to make good power. And if, and this sounds like an exaggeration, but if your final high-end needle setting is at a turn and a half, this is an example, I'm just throwing a number, you can run between a turn and a half and a turn and three quarters, and you're still going to put, or even two turns, you're still going to put sufficient power. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be enough power to do like super tight TikToks on the deck at consistent head speed? Maybe not. But for almost everybody, even including myself, I could get away with having it that much richer and still be able to do what I want to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the main reasons as to why people blow up engines is not only necessarily because there's a problem. We'll get into troubleshooting. There's a lot of issues that could cause an engine to run lean, and you might not know it. I mean, it happened to me not even that long ago, right?
Yeah, true.
But in addition to having a, I mean, you could, anything could happen. But if it, if you don't have a problem, if everything's running okay, 99% reason why people blow up engines is because they keep riching it, leaning it and leaning it, thinking that they're going to get more power. Mm-hmm. And they just go on the lean side. And it doesn't take much. These things can't take that kind of abuse.
Yeah, they get too hot and you take out the ring, you burn up a bearing, you burn up the cylinder. You know, things expand and, you know, you start scoring some parts. And once you score them, I mean, they're never the same after that. You gotta change them.
So, it's game over.
Yeah, just always err on the side of rich. You can't really hurt it per se if you go too rich.
You know, thinking about that, this is a very good tip that some people will learn hopefully from this tip. Talking about power, lack of power. Mm-hmm. One thing I've seen people do is to have the wrong gear ratio. Mm-hmm. That is incredibly important.
Yes.
You could tune your engine to the best of its ability. You could be an expert tuner. If your gear ratio is not suitable for the model and engine mm-hmm. that you're flying, mm-hmm. your helicopter is going to be underpowered.
Right.
Classic example, James Van Hook. We go back to James. Mm-hmm. James had a YS engine mm-hmm. running with the OS gear ratio, which is 8.2:1. Mm-hmm. He wasn't getting the power that he wanted. Mm-hmm. Changed the gear ratio on his Goblin 700 Nitro, Black Nitro, problem solved. Mm-hmm. Make sure you use the right gear ratio. Mm-hmm. If it's OS on a 700 class machine, you want an 8.2:1, more or less. Mm-hmm. If it's YS, you need to go lower. I don't remember right off the top of my head, but it's in the upper sevens.
I think it's 7.9 or something.
Yeah, and that's very important. Mm-hmm. Very important. Mm-hmm. Something to keep in mind, because a lot of people miss out on that. Well, I just bought a Goblin Black Nitro and mm-hmm. I put a YS, you know, 120, but it's a dog. Well, you have the wrong gear ratio probably. Yeah. You got to change it.
And the reason for that is because nitros make their peak power at a certain RPM.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to achieve, say, on a 700 nitro, the desired RPM on average is between 1950 and 1980. Yeah. But if your engine is not spinning the right RPM to achieve that RPM, you're never going to get the right power.
Yeah.
That's correct. Why you need the proper gear ratio.
Yeah, and I think on all OS, I don't know anymore, but back in the OS, my OS days with Steve Helms and stuff, I think the optimum RPM for that OS engine to put out all the power it could was 15,700 RPM.
Sounds about right.
So when you divide that by 8.2, then you get the 2000 or 1980 or whatever that works out to be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's gear ratio is extremely, extremely important. So yep. What about governors? What do you think of governors?
Governor. I've had a lot of people ask me, when it comes time to break in a motor, do you keep the governor on or do you keep it off? And I always keep the governor on. I've never seen a reason to turn it off. I know some people fly on something called a V-curve, but I've always run governor on just because no matter what you do flying-wise, it's going to do its best to maintain the same RPM. For reference, I think on my OS 105, I run it at 1980 governed with the V-bar governor, and it runs really well. I know there's various other governors out there, like the Multigov is pretty old. Old school.
Well, the thing is, what I tell people is, if you are not comfortable tuning, if you're not comfortable flying, in other words, like you could be a pretty accomplished pilot, but if you're not at the high level of flying and you're not comfortable tuning, disable the governor for your brake, for your tuning, for your actual tuning session.
Okay.
Because if you disable the governor and you have a normal curve, like you said, a V-curve, mm-hmm. you know that on your full throttle, you're When you're a full collective, you're a full wide open carburetor barrel. You're wide a full open, throttle. Yeah. But when you're a full collective with governor turned on, you might not be at Fair. Full. It depends. Fair. It depends, right?
Fair.
And that's not so obvious when you're full throttle or full collective, but that's more obvious when you're like half or mm-hmm. somewhere in between.
Yeah.
When you have governor, you know, that governor might just give you a wider throttle mm-hmm. setting that's to, fair. To yeah. maintain the RPM. But when the governor is disabled, mm-hmm. then that half stick is half open, yeah. no matter what, right? That's, or whatever that is, yeah. 55% open or whatever.
That's a good point.
So I think that for season, like, it's hard for people to know if you're truly at a wide open carburetor barrel setting, wide open carb, with the governor running versus mm-hmm. with the governor off. If the governor is off, your stick translates into your carb opening every time, right?
Yes. Agreed.
So it makes it a little easier for some people that are having, that are either new at tuning, new at nitro, or, you know, maybe not totally comfortable with their flying where they can be comfortable doing wide open, mm-hmm. you know, full throttle loops or, you know, very fast TikToks or wide open forward flight. So that helps. That helps. But I think that when it comes down to whether to use a governor or not, I think everybody should, unless yeah. you're a Tim Jones that wants to run 100%. You know, wide open.
Well, let's touch on that. Tim Jones is a unique guy who yeah. is, at this time, he's not really involved in the hobby too much anymore, but he used to modify his engines and open them up, and he didn't run a governor. He just ran straight curve. When he clicking it all up, that carburetor was full wide open.
But if you paid attention, every time he flew, he kept the engine what we call loaded. He Correct. Kept the helicopter loaded.
Correct.
Because if he unloaded it, so in other words, always applying pitch, always making it move, always mm-hmm. Loading mm-hmm. the engine. Because if he ever were to, say, go up and do a McDougal or like a tail slide and completely mm-hmm. come down to zero pitch, mm-hmm. his thing would overspeed to like 3,000 RPM, right?
Yeah, absolutely explode yeah. the engine.
So yeah. it probably blow everything up. So yeah. he... Tim was or is very knowledgeable about his engine mods and mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff and mm-hmm. and yeah, he knew how to fly his helicopter to yeah. to get the most out of that particular setup.
Right.
I don't personally recommend anybody to run 100%. I think the minute you unload it, especially if you everybody's gonna at some point unload the helicopter, go back into a hover.
Yeah.
Or do some kind of knife edge sort of maneuver where it requires zero pitch, you're going to mm-hmm. overspeed too much. You might blow up your engine from mm-hmm. overspeeding.
And so, unless you know what you're doing, just stick to governor mode. It's safer. It's more consistent. Tim Jones was a special creature that got away with it.
Yeah, and if you remove governor mode for tuning, don't do a flat line at 100%. Do a V-curve, you know. And that V-curve should have a very low, relatively low throttle setting at half stick. So half stick, you're going to be at no more than 40%. And at the ends of the V, so full negative would be 100, full mm-hmm. positive would be 100. But that mid-stick setting should not exceed 40%.
Agreed.
And that's a good setting there for, you know, maybe overall flying and tuning and things like that. Mm-hmm. But even if you're not a great pilot and you're getting started in a nitro, you're not very experienced with helicopters, I still recommend that eventually you get a governor because
yes.
it's the proper way to do it. You're going to maintain that smooth, consistent mm-hmm. head speed, and that's mm-hmm. what the engine's going to be happy with.
Agreed, 100%.
So. And talking about Jones, he used to run a bladder on his fuel tank.
Yes.
So what to run? Magnet, clunk, bladder?
Well, let's kind of get into it. Back in the day, correct me if I'm wrong, but the most common way was a clunk, which was not a magnet. It was just a piece of metal with a hole in it that would kind of...
Brass.
It was weighted to stay at the bottom of the tank to suck all the fuel in. Because if you didn't have anything, the fuel tubing would just sit there wherever it wanted to and not really suck the fuel efficiently. But the fuel clunk would sit there and serve as a weighted piece to suck the fuel, correct? And the problem with the fuel clunk is if you ever got into something like a forward hurricane, it would stay at the back of the tank. And as soon as it wasn't sucking fuel, your engine would shut right off. And that's when they started coming out with the
You mean fuel like magnet. A backwards hurricane?
Backwards hurricane, yeah, that's backwards, correct. Yeah, backwards. Yeah. I'm confused. Yeah.
But, then, you know, incredibly enough, like, I remember flying that T-Rex 600 way back in the day, and that thing was flying off of a clunk, and mm-hmm. I never, ever had a flame out ever mm-hmm. on that thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really depends on the helicopter, how the fuel tank is designed. Fair. Some fuel tanks are not designed very well. I'm not going to mention any brands, but I remember a fuel tank that definitely did not have a shape that was very well thought of. Yeah. Yeah. So, but nowadays, most of them are designed well. But with that said, there's no need to run that brass clunk anymore when there is fuel magnets. And the fuel magnet back in the day was made out of foam. Mm-hmm. OMI, James O'Neill from Alabama, used to make the most popular fuel magnet back in the day. And it was it had a foam insert, right? And that foam over time would deteriorate, like we said earlier, especially if you're running muffler pressure, it would be even worse. But even mm-hmm. with backplate pressure and no exhaust fumes being introduced into the tank, it still would deteriorate over time. Mm-hmm. You had to replace it every 3 months. But now SAB is making one that's really good. I hear Lynx has something similar.
Yep.
Where they're both pretty much the same.
They're similar.
And it's almost like a stone, isn't it? It's not. It's a harder material. It's not a foam.
It's a thicker foam. I don't even know if you can call it foam. I wouldn't even know what to call it personally, but
it's like a stone almost, like stone material.
Similar, yeah. And just to kind of jump back to the OMI, if any of you are familiar with the brand of miniature aircraft, they have released a fuel magnet that is almost a carbon copy of the OMI.
Yeah, yeah.
It's available now. You have to ship it from Germany. I've used and it works great. I can't really tell the difference between the miniature one and the SAB one. They both serve the function, which,
correct,
in my opinion, the function is if the fuel magnet is not sitting in fuel, it has fuel soaked in the fuel magnet to keep the engine running when
it
the
absorbs.
Not.
Correct. It absorbs and retains enough fluid or liquid, mm-hmm. like fuel, of course.
Yeah.
That it can deliver enough fuel through the line for a very short period, right. Even if it's not soaked right. or soaking or under or submerged, I guess, right. you could say, in the fuel itself. So
agreed.
Yeah, so it's capable of handling like a second or two of like out of the fuel sort of situation,
and it helps you fly the entire tank of fuel.
I like the SAB on partial, obviously for obvious reasons, but also because it's not that foam, so it lasts longer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the one in my black nitro is got my first black nitro I kept for a year and a half or something like that, and I never had to replace it.
Right.
Never had to replace it.
Agreed. So. Yeah, they work really, really well.
So. Yeah. So what about, let's talk a little bit about breaking in your engine.
Breaking in. Well.
What do you do to break your engine in?
What do I do personally?
Why?
Man, I haven't broken an engine in probably 10 years now, but. What you want to do is you definitely want to err on the rich side. The manual will tell you where to start at. And basically the one goal that my dad taught me when breaking an engine is you never want it to run lean during
not
breaking.
Not even for a split second,
because that can ruin the parts immediately.
Yeah, that's the most important part of breaking in.
Right, and I know a lot of people think, oh, 1 gallon, 2 gallons, no. I mean, I always did about 10 flights, and I would get more aggressive with the flying as it went on. So the first flight was hovering around super rich, blubbery rich. You know, it was basically spitting fuel out of the muffler the first flight.
I used to do that just for one flight, though.
One flight. And then you slowly start to lean it in one click at a time. And, by flight 6, 7, it's starting to make some good power. By 8, 9, you're starting to lean on it more. And then by, 10, 11, 12, you're really starting to fly good.
But that's a key point. Like, I remember Steve Helms always used to say, just fly it. Just fly it. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't baby it,
mm-hmm.
because he always used to say you have got to get some temperature in that engine in order for it to break in.
Correct.
If you're spitting fuel and you're super rich and you're hovering the whole time, you're not breaking anything in. It's running so cool that it doesn't. It's not going to do anything.
Exactly.
You got to get temperature, but without ever running lean. So in other words, you could beat the crap out of it from flight one as long as you're running it rich.
Correct.
And it never gets lean, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah.
And then, after you get to about a gallon, like I'll say 10 flights, maybe a gallon and a half to 2 gallons tops, then you can start really leaning on it. And if you happen to get lean at some point or another during that period, you're going to probably be okay. You don't ever want to go lean, but things will be seated more properly, and it'll be a little bit more resilient to running lean at that point.
Yeah.
So
And then another thing to touch on is whenever you do like a major maintenance on your engine, if you're changing a rear bearing or a ring or a cylinder, I always like to run it richer for at least two or three flights. Just let everything kind of seat in and get happy and comfortable again.
Yeah, so maintenance. Like, what did you used to do for maintenance?
I don't want to brag, but I had one of the best engine tuners around. Always look at my engine. Two people. My dad, Burke Hammer, and Steve Helms were always around whenever I was flying, where my engines always lasted a really long time. So the only maintenance that I ever really did was a rear bearing, like once every like 5 years. And then, yeah, I got lucky. And then, you know, like a ring, like every other year, just because my engines always ran pretty healthy.
So one thing that it's important to mention here is rear bearing.
Yes.
So I don't want to mention any fuel names. I don't want to say anything, but I know fuels that are not, they're not bad for your bearing, but I know that there are certain instances where certain fuels don't allow your bearing to last as long as other fuels.
Correct.
And this is, again, a shameless plug. I hardly ever fly Nitro anymore. I have no vested interest in these people anymore. I used to be sponsored by them back in the day.
Yeah.
Not anymore. Byron Fuels,
yep,
I think, is one of the best, if not the best, fuel you can run. They use a special oil package from Klotz.
Yep.
For the people that are familiar with NASCAR racing and things like that, Klotz is a very popular brand, and they literally designed and worked on this special blend of oils for their Nitro rotor rates for their helicopters. And I can testify that it's perhaps the best oil package you can get, and yep, your bearing is going to last much longer. So fuel quality is important for bearing longevity.
Yeah.
The other thing that's important is how long you go. Where do you store your helicopter? You store it in your garage? It's not going to be as healthy as storing it in a dry place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Florida, Kyle, you know, my garage is just 94% humidity
all the time.
You know, 8 months out of the year or 9 months out of the year.
Yeah.
So where you store it is important, and how often you run it is important. If you let it sit for a couple of years, your rear bearing is probably going to rust and go bad.
Yep.
I used to change rear bearings on an average every like 5 cases of fuel,
mm-hmm,
you know, 20 gallons or
that's
so.
Fair. Yeah.
But that's when I was flying often enough. That was like constant Nitro flying, so it wouldn't be unusual to do that in a matter of, you know, it was easy to go through that in 6 months, right?
Sure.
You know,
sure,
a gallon a week or whatever, like 6 months, you get, you know, 5 cases, 20 gallons, you change the rear bearing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is overkill, but I used to always change the ring when I changed the rear bearing.
Wow.
And the reason why I did that is because why not, right? You got to take the freaking, you got to flip your helicopter upside down or do whatever you need to do and go through 50 screws or bolts or whatever to get your engine out. And then you got to get your engine, you know, your bell out of the engine and your engine fan and this and that and the fan shroud and the carburetor and the back plate and all this. You have the engine completely taken apart to put it inside your oven or hit it with a torch to be able to remove your rear bearing. Might as well just change the ring. Why not?
Sure.
The rings, even to this day, are not that expensive. I don't remember how much they were back in the day, $20-some. So why not?
Might as well, yeah.
So, and then the front bearing usually lasts a long time. I remember changing front bearings every 2 to 3 rear bearing replacements.
Yeah, they don't really go out too often.
Just for the hell of it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
those are usually safe. And then I think we only changed a liner, an engine liner, when it ran lean for no reason. Like if you had, say like you had a fuel line break and it ran lean and killed itself, well, yeah, you're probably going to have to change the liner because it's all scored up at that
point.
And
if it got all scored up and stuff. And you could feel that with your fingers very easily and visually see it.
Yeah.
But the bearing changes, man. Like, you know, and the method I used to do was like pretty kind of, I guess, unique to me, but I think some other people do it the way I do it. Take the whole engine apart, take everything out of the engine, everything. You can't leave anything on that engine. Just strip it down to nothing, where you just have an engine crankcase and your two bearings in it. And then I would heat the oven up to like 350 degrees, and then I would take the crankshaft and put it in the freezer. The actual crankshaft that I pull out of the engine. I put that in the freezer.
Which has the rear bearing on it.
Well, no, because the crankshaft would come off and the bearing would stay in the crankcase, right?
Okay.
But I would put the shaft by itself in the freezer, and then I would take my brand new rear bearing and its little OS bag, put it in the freezer too. And I would do that like an hour ahead of time. Like I would do that first before I start taking the engine out of the heli.
Sure.
By the time I take the engine out of the heli and it's all stripped down to nothing or whatever, I finally get my crankshaft out of it, put it in the freezer too.
Mm-hmm.
Then I put it in the oven. And then I'll wait like 20 minutes. And then when I get it out of the oven, I just tap it on like, you know, a hard surface very lightly and the whole bearing comes off.
Mm-hmm.
And then right at that time, I get back into the freezer and I get my bearing and my crankshaft. And I put the bearing in the crankshaft and I stick the crankshaft back in the engine. And it goes in so easily because the engine's still hot and the bearing and the crankshaft are really, really cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then let it sit for like a solid half an hour until it cools off to room temperature and then put it all back together.
Yeah.
And then put it back in the helicopter. But boy, what a pain in the butt.
What a freaking process, huh?
But it was like, it's just looking forward to that next flight. That's what made it worthwhile. It was just looking forward to, I'm going to go fly it again.
Get some real power out of it again. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. The good old days, man.
Oh, yeah. So what about... Mufflers.
Mufflers.
We talked about it. But what do you do? Yeah, we talked about the pipes from back in the day, the pipes from today. Today, you can basically just get an OS power boost if you're an OS guy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if you're a YS? I don't even know.
YS makes a pipe.
They make a pipe?
They make a pipe for most engines. Okay. And if you're lucky, you can find a Hattori for the pipes, I think. I think the Hattoris for the YS are more circulated. I think you can find those used.
Yeah, you could probably find
online online more often. But
what else is there for OS? So the Power Boost.
Yep.
The Botos's pipe. What is
the Protune pipe?
Protune, yeah.
Protune.
And then the Italian guy.
MRCI. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good.
Those
pipe.
Are on. But
solid pipe.
What I think we should touch on briefly is how to mount it, because there's a lot of different ways to mount it. I personally, what I do is I take the muffler and I mount it to the engine, and that's it. No RTV, no epoxy, no seal, no nothing, no gasket, nothing. Just mount it straight on and it's all well and good. I've never really seen any leaks, never had any issues, but the one thing that you might see is when you're flying, it'll come loose. And the best time to do it is when it's hot. So if you're flying, your muffler comes loose, go up, tighten the bolts, finish your flight, and you should be good after that. I know there's a lot of different ways.
What you know, back in the day, I used to use RTV.
Yeah.
Is it RTV?
RTV,
is that what
yep.
it's called? That, yep. That gasket type material is usually like orange in color. I used to use for the longest time a line used to make these gaskets, paper gaskets.
Mm-hmm.
They were solid. The problem with the gasket is if your muffler broke loose in flight one time, that gasket would break.
Done.
And then once you remove the muffler, that gasket was so destroyed and it was stuck to it.
Yep.
And you couldn't just remove it. You'd have to take like an X-Acto knife or something and like start working your freaking ass off to clean that engine's muffler surface. Yep. Lately, I don't even care, and it doesn't matter. Like you said, just stick it in with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's brand new and the surface is perfect, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
As long as every time is in perfect shape and it's not scored or like doesn't have like blade marks from trying to remove previous RTVs and things like that, it'll make a perfect seal and you'll be good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another good way is my dad taught me to use either 5-minute or 30-minute epoxy, just a very, very thin layer between the engine and the muffler. I say thin because if there's excess and it goes into your engine somehow, that's a great way to take out a glow plug. Either epoxy or RTV, if it goes into your engine, it'll take out your glow plug and it'll ruin your flight very quickly. But lately, I don't even put anything. Just bolt it up, make sure that the engine surface is clean, the pipe surface is clean, crank it down. Usually the first flight, it will come loose. I've seen that pretty regularly, but while it's hot, just re-tighten it down, crank it down. And it's been good, you know, with the Protune pipe, that's how I did it, and with the Power Boost pipe, that's how I do it. And so far, so good. Knock on wood, no issues. But then, you know, some of you guys might know about the Hattori pipe, which is a different kind of mounting, where it's a what we call a soft mounting, where it has dampeners. There's a piece that actually bolts onto the engine, and then there's some rubber dampeners that separate the pipe from the mounting. And at least one pro that I can think of right now is in a crash, that'll be a little bit of a dampening if you crash on the muffler side where the pipe will kind of move with the crash and not, you know, break the mount or the muffler case itself.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? You kind of agree?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll definitely, I think it'll break it. Yeah. Yeah.
So the soft mount with a Hattori will kind of protect it in a way, but like something with a power boost where it's a hard mount, you run the risk of cracking the engine case that way.
And it's such a hit or miss thing. You know, I've seen people break. I've seen crashes where people just completely destroy their, like literally crack the engine crankcase.
Yes.
I've seen that happen many times. It, mm-hmm. Knock on wood, it's never happened to me.
Sure.
And I've run fixed, you know, non-dampened pipe mounting systems. I don't know. I mean, they all have their pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
I love a heart-mounted pipe because there's nothing that will fail. There's True. No rings to deal with. There's True. No grommets to deal with.
True.
But on the other hand, some of the pipes like that MCR, is it MC?
MRCI.
MICR pipe has the grommets and the O-rings like Hattori, but it, man, that pipe is sweet. It sounds good. It tunes good.
Mm-hmm.
It has like a very torquey feel to it, like low end power. I don't know. I think there's pros and cons to everything, you know, sure. to each their own. I think sure. you can't go wrong with either one. I wouldn't get like the ProTune pipe because, oh, it's hard mounted. I think you'll be happy with it either way. Like, I don't think there's sure. a good or a bad. I think it's just a matter of personal preference.
Agreed. You know? Agreed. So, but moving on, and the last point that we want to touch on is troubleshooting. Now, this is a very, very broad topic, but I personally want to touch on one thing. Like we mentioned earlier,
this episode is getting long.
It is long, so we're going to wrap it up here real quick. Oh, but
Troubleshooting.
This is broad, but there's one thing that I definitely want to bring up. If you're having trouble tuning, keep going rich. And if you cannot, for the life of you, get it to run rich, then it's a fuel delivery issue. Now, what I mean by that is perhaps you have a broken fuel line and it's sucking in air, or your pressure line is broken, or your fuel magnet's deteriorated. But no matter what, you should always be able to get the motor to run rich. And if you can't,
yeah,
9 times out of 10, that's fuel delivery.
If you, I mean, granted, there could be carburetor problems. I've seen carburetors that have yes. issues that you start richening and they don't go rich. But if... you know, and there's different manufacturing tolerances or carburetors and things that could cause a carburetor not to be overly sensitive to tuning changes. But if you have an OS 90, as an example, OS 105,
mm-hmm.
if you go to like 2.5 turns on your high end and 2.5 turns on your mid range, if that thing is not spitting out fuel up its freaking ass,
mm-hmm.
you have a problem.
Yes.
You have a problem.
Somewhere, yes.
Now, here's the list. Let's just go over a quick list.
Mm-hmm.
I had an engine that blew up on me recently, remember?
Yep.
And I took off and it sounded lean and I was kind of confused. Like, this is weird. I'm running, my needle settings are very rich, but it sounds lean. There makes no sense. And before I could even land it, that thing blew up mm-hmm. internally. It didn't yep. take any time for it to blow up.
I remember.
And we didn't know what happened. I never had anything like this happen in decades of flying nitro.
Mm-hmm.
And after you, Kyle, helped me, like, you know, we built a new heli and, like, we fixed it and all that, you found that the line that was going from the back plate to the fuel tank had a tiny, tiny little, like a yeah. tiny hole.
Yeah.
But this hole was small enough to where... when I topped off the fuel tank, I never noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
Even under pressure, it never, like even flying like or whatever, you could not see a leak because right. obviously it's getting air. It just wasn't pushing enough mm-hmm. pressure into the tank. It wasn't pressurized anymore.
Correct.
And that was just enough to blow it up. So check your fuel lines, mm-hmm. number one.
Very closely, because it can be hard to see.
It could be very hard to see. You might not see it. Check your fuel lines. Mm-hmm. If you have a fuel filter... I don't recommend running a fuel filter. Some people will disagree with me. I don't run a fuel filter. Run a fuel filter before your fuel goes into your fuel tank.
Yes.
Like that you need to yes. do. So have a fuel filter in line on your fuel pump or your fuel jug yeah. or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Make sure that whatever fuel you put into the tank is not contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
But from your tank to your engine, you really don't need it. Back in the day, we used to use the OMI type fuel clunk.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide to go with the miniature aircraft style that's made out of foam, yes, you might need a fuel fuel filter, because over time that foam material deteriorates and it starts to disintegrate, and it can make it to your carburetor.
Exactly.
But if you're running a Clunk or you're running the Aux, the Lynx or the SAB style, you're fine. You don't need a fuel filter, but make sure that fuel is it's filtered on its way to the tank.
Mine is filtered before it leaves the fuel jug.
So. Correct.
Yeah.
So, but if you do have a fuel filter, check your fuel filter. Mm-hmm. It could be clogged. Check your fuel lines. Mm-hmm. Fuel delivery is the number one cause of failure on an engine.
Yeah.
Your check valve. Mm-hmm. Check your check valve. Make sure your check valve is not getting stuck and is allowing air to flow in the right direction from your crankcase to your tank.
The regulator.
Check. Well, that would be a much harder thing for people to check. But another thing to check that's easy to check is make sure your muffler is tightened all the
way. True. Very true.
I've seen mufflers that are slightly... I saw a guy, like, there was a muffler that had lug nuts on the other side. I forgot who this was. This was, like, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. He had the long bolt going through the crankcase on the engine into the muffler with a lug nut on the other side, and one of them was a little bit loose to where the muffler wasn't really sealed to the engine, but it wasn't loose enough to, like, make a noise or felt like it was loose, and that was enough to make the engine run lean. That joint, that connection between your crankcase and your muffler is not airtight, you're going to run lean as well.
Yeah.
What else is there, like, before we get to the carb? Fuel delivery is a big problem. Fuel delivery. Another thing is, like, proper airflow. You know, this sounds kind of extremely unusual, but the engine needs airflow. So, like, the design of the helicopter is crucial to how well the engine runs. Like, back in the day, like, Skidoo 50 Hirobo had a terrible, like, design when it came to how much air it pushed into the motor.
Right.
Motor needs air. It needs to be cooled off.
Yeah.
Check your fan. Maybe your fan is broken or missing some, I don't know,
missing
blades.
Some,
I don't know.
Blades in the fan, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I don't know.
Another thing that I touched on briefly is the fuel grommet. If your fuel grommet is starting to break down, it could be letting some air in. Too much air, and again,
fuel grommet in the tank. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
It
could
be running lean because of that. You know,
even the fuel line inside your fuel tank could have a kink or a leak, or it could be punctured.
Yep.
Now, if that all fails, then you got to move on to the engine itself.
Yes.
Generally, the engines are pretty resilient, and it's typically not an engine problem, but it could be a carburetor problem.
True.
99% of the time, it's not an engine problem, unless you've already destroyed your engine. Say you already run it lean, you scored your sleeve. Your ring is destroyed. Something's really seriously wrong with the internals of the engine, but that's very unlikely.
Right.
More than likely, it's either one of all the options we gave you, or it could be a problem with your regulator and your carburetor itself.
Yes, I have seen the regulator on OS engines pick up some dirt. If you're not filtering your fuel, it can pick up some dirt or some foam. The regulator can get stuck in one direction or the other, you know. If you know what you're doing, or if you're real careful, you can open up that regulator and kind of clear the dirt out. You know, just you can just blow into it via the nipple and just kind of clear the dirt out and clear the air out. But
there's a diaphragm in there too that could go bad. And, you know, when it comes down to it, the best thing to do if you get into that kind of bind situation, send it back to OS. Yep. OS is a repair center. Is it US Futaba? Is it still kind of the same?
I believe it's Futaba USA is taking care of OS now.
Yeah, I would assume. So it's in Huntsville, Alabama. I'm not 100% sure that's where you would send it to, but just send it to the manufacturer. If it's a YS, send it to YS.
Mm-hmm.
They'll look it up. They'll fix if there's any problem. There might be a fee if they, you know, generally with engines, warranties are very limited.
Yeah.
But there might be a fee, but still worth it because, you know, you might be saving, you know, hundreds of dollars later.
Yeah. And if they have to change a ring or a bearing, they'll do it for you. And, you know, then you know it's done right. You know, no matter what, it's done right. And you're getting back an engine that should run basically brand new at that point.
So. And we have a guy that came to us at Urchin and asked us some questions. His engine was running hot. We went through a list of troubleshooting steps. And he said, everything is checked. I said, well, the only thing left to test is the regulator. He said, well, he sent the engine. I'm not going to mention the company, OSYS, but he sent the engine back and they fixed it and they sent it back to him and said, well, did you send the carburetor? He said, no. It's the only thing left to check was the carburetor.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him very explicitly, like, don't run it. Don't run it. You're going to blow it up. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no reason to.
Right.
I know we all want to fly, but I'd rather not fly than fly once and, you know, spend $600, $800 later, right?
Sure. So. Exactly.
So, I mean, generally, most of these things just require a little bit of common sense. Like, mm-hmm. it's not really that hard. Like, work your way out and in. Check your fuel lines. Check your fuel filters. Check your check valve. Check your muffler. Mm-hmm. You know, even your glow plug. Why not? Change the glow plug. If you're in doubt, change it. A lot of times, glow plugs will make an engine run crappy.
Yep.
And if you've exhausted every method and you still can make the engine run rich with very wide open needle settings, then send the carburetor back.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
get it looked at. So
what about nitro? What nitro did it run?
Nitro percentage
nitro, yeah.
Oh man. For a 50 to a 91 I always ran 30%. And for the 105 I run either 15% or
22.5.
I've run both and both runs well.
But if you run 30%, you're supposed to add another shim.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Which I don't think it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
You're not gonna get it to tune perfectly, mm-hmm. but it'll still run fine. So correct. Ideally if you get an OS 105 in stock form, you want 22.5% nitro.
Right.
Yeah. Which is a little bit cheaper, so it works out really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Well,
God, we could keep going, but we have to stop.
Yeah.
Basically, you realize our episodes are getting longer and longer. This is the longest one ever.
Well,
hey. Longest one ever.
Very broad topic. But let's end it with, if you guys have questions, please send it either my way or Bert's way, and we will get you guys taken care of. I'm sure there's some stuff we forgot.
I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we forgot.
So yeah. If you have any questions, please send it to us. We will get you guys taken care of and answered. But what do you think?
Yeah, this is the record.
Yeah.
1 hour and plus.
Yeah.
I think our longest one was Urcha episode. The recap one was 1 hour 2 minutes. This is going to be almost 1 hour 10 minutes.
Crazy. So.
So.
Anyway, what do you think?
Let's leave it for next week. I think we had enough chat this week.
It was enough. So.
So, anyway. Send us your questions.
Yes.
Facebook.com/TheBKOfficial or The Official BK. One of the two will work.
It's, yep.
Or send it to Kyle at his Instagram, Kyle Stacey.
Or you can reach me on Facebook at facebook.com/KyleStaceyRC. I am.
You made your first Instagram helicopter related post today. Yesterday.
Like my third. But anyway. Facebook.com/KyleStaceyRC. Best way to reach me. I am a little bit slow to responding, but I will respond. So yeah. Bear with me.
Facebook.com/TheBKOfficial, I confirmed.
There you go.
Or Facebook.com/BurtRC or Instagram.com/Burt_Kammer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and thank you for listening. Technical episode about nitro.
Yeah, we'll keep it light next time. Keep it fun and light. But thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yep.
If you have any topics you want us to cover, let us know. We're always looking for new topics and things to cover. So
yeah, one of these days we have to go over all the comments that people have left us on Podbean and iTunes and stuff like that. We should do that.
Yeah. Cool. So topics, give them to us. We're always open to everything. We're doing this for you guys. So let us know.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.